Well, good morning and welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here with you, hoping you're having a great day so far. It's good to be back in the saddle. Yesterday, I was out of pocket and I just had a scheduling conflict I couldn't avoid. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that as this first segment progresses. Hopefully, you're having a great day wherever you may be. Whenever or wherever you may be listening, if you're with me on Facebook Live, good morning. Glad to have you here along for the live version of the program. If you're listening via podcast, as friends are everywhere, thank you for being there as well. Thank you for going to iTunes or Google Podcasts or wherever you happen to subscribe and picking up your subscription to the podcast so that it comes to your listening device all on its little own every day. Thanks for being there. Good to have you along. It is another beautiful day in our neighborhood. Hopefully, you've got great plans for today, and you're going to go out there and just knock them dead. Just get out there and make a big difference today, and whatever you have your hands on. It is, I'm taking a first step in the same direction again after my visit yesterday. Yesterday, as I explained on the Monday edition of the program, I had a scheduled appointment with my surgeon, the guy who sawed my knee off and replaced it. As someone told me in rehab, knee replacement surgery is basically carpentry. So that's why I say he sawed my knee off and replaced it. Because, they do a lot of sawing and hammering when they're replacing your knee joint. But I met with him yesterday just as a follow-up. He wanted to see me again in the month of May. And so we scheduled an appointment for about mid-May he wanted to talk about the possibility of also replacing my right knee because my right knee was in pretty bad shape. Originally, what he had said was, you get this done. He told me, he said, I'm going to shoot straight with you. Your left knee is shot. It's just gone. Your right knee's not far behind it. Hopefully, once we get your left knee replaced, that'll buy you some time. That'll give you maybe a year or so before you have to get the other one replaced. So I got to thinking about it after I got home and I'm in rehab. I'm going through all this stuff, which, by the way, if this is something that is in your future, your doctor has told you, your arthritis is pretty bad. You need to do something about that knee joint or your hip joint or whatever. Don't put it off, because that was my biggest regret in doing this, was how long I waited to do it, because I waited until I had gotten to the point where I spent almost all of my time sitting in a chair, not able to do the things that I enjoy doing simply because I couldn't stay on my feet for more than half an hour at a time. So I waited far, far too long. I should have done it before now. But if that's something that you're talking with your doctor about and they're telling you, that's in your future, have a serious conversation about the situation and start the ball rolling and get it done. Because that was my biggest regret, was that I waited so long. You're looking at a couple of months, a couple of tough months after that, a few really tough days, right after the surgery because of the pain and the inconvenience. And then you've got a couple of months of rehab after that. And once you get beyond the rehab, you'll wonder why you waited so long, because the pain is gone and your mobility is back. And it does take some time to rebuild your stamina and rebuild your strength, but it is well worth it. And I have come to that point now, and I've decided that I'm going to go ahead and move forward and have my right knee done. So in July... the month after, in July, in just a touch over a month, 6 weeks or so, 10th of July, that's when it is. On the 10th of July, I'll go back in again and have my right knee done, which of course is going to pull me out of pocket here for a little while. But since I've been through this once and I know how this game is played, maybe I can arrange things so that I won't be out of pocket as long this time. We'll see how it all plays out, though. But just as a heads up, in July, going back in again, and I'll be out of pocket for a little while. as little time as possible. But that's what my yesterday was all about. My yesterday was about finalizing, you know, putting the last dot, crossing the last T on my knee surgery and scheduling the next one so that I can move forward. Because now that I have no pain in my left knee, I realize how bad my right knee is. And yesterday he said, yeah, it's in pretty rough shape. Because we did x-rays again yesterday. And he said, yeah, it's pretty bad. And that's true, because now whenever I do spend time, if I'm shopping with Jane or I'm out thrift store scavenging with my buddy Mike, or I'm out doing, you know, whatever I need to do on a daily basis, if I spend time on my feet, it's my right knee that starts me looking for a place to sit down and take a load off for a few minutes so that the ibuprofen can do its job. But as I said, that was my yesterday. And I advise you, if at all you are in this situation, please don't put it off. Do something about it. Get it done. Take advantage of your insurance. Cough up what you have to cough up to pay the rest, and get it done. One reason for me going ahead and scheduling this is because my deductible's already covered. I've already paid all that. So if I get it done in the same calendar year, then my cost is going to be minimal. My inconvenience is not going to be all that wonderful, but the cost is minimal. You have to think about that as well, okay? All right. A couple of things before we get rolling. We've got some things to talk about today. The Alabama State Senate has passed the HB 314 bill. It's an abortion ban. It's heading to Governor Ivey's desk. And, of course, the hysteria is already at life jacket proportions. We're just about to drown in it here. We'll talk about that coming up in just a few. The media, of course, are lying to you about this bill, just like they're lying to you about Georgia's pro-life heartbeat bill. We'll take a look at Georgia's bill coming up in just a bit. Seth Myers has proven to us once again that he is a useful idiot. And we'll talk about the context of his idiocy and how it applies to a certain congressperson who's getting a lot of media, a lot of attention nowadays, and she's not liking it. And who knows what else we'll have time to get into. But first I thought, you know what? We need to laugh at something. And so let's do. George Carlin was probably one of the best wordsmiths of all time. He used the English language in a way that nobody else since has. And at one point, he was speaking to a press club gathering, and he wanted to talk with them about the language that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And it kind of goes to what this show is about, keeping one eye on Washington, D.C.
Now, having somewhat successfully established my press credentials, and because you and I have at least one thing in common, which is that all of us deal with language all the time, I thought it might be nice today for me to come to you with some of my language complaints. Certainly not to blame them on you, although, of course, you are implicated. And not that you can help it. I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover, the politicians, the celebrities, and the lawyers. And although their level of insincerity is astonishing, it's still kind of fun to hear them talk. In particular, it's fun to listen to Washington talk. Whenever the issue of term limits comes up, I always tell people the only term limits I'm interested in would be to limit some of the terms used by politicians. They speak, of course, with great caution, because they must take care not to actually say anything. Proof of this, according to their own words, is that they don't actually say things, they indicate them. As I indicated yesterday, and as the president indicated to me, but sometimes they don't indicate, they suggest. Let me suggest that as I indicated yesterday, I haven't determined that yet. See, they don't decide, they determine. If it's a really serious matter, they make a judgment. I haven't made a judgment on that yet. When the hearings are concluded, I will make a judgment, or I might make an assessment. I'm not sure. I haven't determined that yet. But when I do, I will advise you. They don't tell, they advise. I advised him that I had made a judgment. Thus far, he hasn't responded. They don't answer, they respond. He hasn't responded to my initiative. An initiative is an idea that isn't going anywhere. When he responds to my initiative, I will review his response, take a position, and make a recommendation. See, they don't read, they review. They don't have opinions, they take positions, and they don't give advice, they make recommendations. And so, at long last, after each has responded to the other's initiatives, and each has reviewed the other's responses, and everyone has taken a position, made a judgment, and offered a recommendation, now they have to do something. But that would be much too direct. So instead, they address the problem. We're addressing the problem, and we'll soon be proceeding. That's a big activity here in Washington. Proceeding. They're always proceeding or moving forward. A lot of that goes on. Senator, have you solved that problem? Well, we're moving forward on that. And when they're not moving forward, they're moving something else forward, such as the process. We have to move the process forward so we can implement the provisions of the initiative in order to meet these challenges. No one has problems anymore. Challenges. That's why we need people who can make the tough decisions. Tough decisions like how much soft money can I expect to collect in exchange for my core values?
And immediately following a rousing round of applause, George Carlin, the comic genius who in my life is sorely missed. I really enjoyed the man's work, and he was a genius, and he made us laugh in ways that people just don't today. Comedy today is crass, it's base, it's vulgar, and I'm not speaking as someone who is a prude here. I'm not, but today, comedy is not what it once was. And because of political correctness, comedy is not accepted in a lot of places today. Because what makes us laugh is not politically correct. It just makes sense. It's just not politically correct. So it offends people, so they object to it. Bless their hearts. Well, still, from time to time, people will make an effort. And one of the things that bothers me about comedy today, some comedy, is that it's coming from a leftist progressive perspective. For example, Bill Nye recently recorded a video for a late night TV show, and this is what passed as comedy.
Here, I've got an experiment for you. Safety glasses on. By the end of this century, if emissions keep rising, the average temperature on Earth could go up another 4 to 8 degrees. What I'm saying is the planet's on f***ing fire. There are a lot of things we could do to put it out. Are any of them free? No, of course not. Nothing's free, you idiots. Grow the f*** up. You're not children anymore. I didn't mind explaining photosynthesis to you when you were 12, but you're adults now, and this is an actual crisis. Got it? Safety glasses off.
Well, two rousing applause from the audience who share that baseness, that vulgarity. So apparently dropping F-bombs like an angry adolescent who isn't getting their way is supposed to be funny. And it's supposed to convince us that man-made climate fraud is real. Or the man-made climate change is not a fraud. It's real. Go figure. The people who claim to embrace science are laughing because those of us who actually look at and listen to real science, not the pseudo-pop science these other people are embracing, we actually look at real science and see the results of real science don't tell us what they're warning us is coming. They are talking down to us because we're idiots and we need to grow the F up. This is the attitude of progressivism. It's condescending, it's dismissive, it's superior. And it belittles those who will not embrace it. Bill Nye may be trying to be funny here, but what he's actually accomplishing is showing us the true nature of progressivism and the climate change panic. It's a fraud. And they're losing patience with those of us who are seeing through it. Still to come, we'll take a look at abortion bills in Alabama and in Georgia. On the other side of the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. Having a great Wednesday, and I hope you are as well. It's funny, going back to comedy, one of the things, having worked in the radio business for quite some time with a former stand-up comic, my partner Dave Mack, I have a pretty good insight into the mentality of people into comedy. And I actually enjoy good comedy. And I appreciate it for what it is. And there have been some people who have been just really, really good at their craft. And those are usually the ones that make you think and then surprise you with a perspective that you never considered. And people like Jerry Seinfeld are really good at taking the mundane and making it really, really funny. And there are other people that are very gifted at it, too. John Panette, who passed away a few years ago. John Panette was one of the greats. Just a great. If you've never heard of John Panette, I encourage you to get on YouTube today and just type in John Panette, P-I-N-N-E-T-T-E. I think that's right. And just look at some of his comedy videos. If you look at some of his older ones, you're not surprised he passed away. I mean, the guy weighed as much as a semi. He was just huge. And in his latter years, he was working really, really hard to lose the weight. And honestly, he didn't look healthy. He'd lost a lot of weight, but he looked bad. And finally, his body gave up the fight. But he was so funny. Funny guy. And his entire routine was about being a big guy and eating and the struggle to lose weight. And he was just a very funny man. But it's so sad that today comedy goes for the cheap laugh. I was in a comedy club in Atlanta once years ago. I went to see Brad Stein. He's another guy I like. It was a clean comedy night. Brad Stein had actually been on the Sean Hannity radio show that day, which was broadcasting from Atlanta, and they broadcast from that club. And at any rate, I went that night and saw Brad, and his opening act lost the crowd at one point. And you can tell he's up there doing his thing, and people start having little whispered conversations. He's lost their attention. He's not engaging them anymore. And so he drops an F-bomb, which shocked everybody, and there was a little rush of laughter because of the shock. And he said something like, "Oh, that's what it's going to take to keep you focused, huh?" And then he moved on with his act. And it was the only piece of profanity in the entire evening. The only bit of profanity in the entire evening. And I mentioned it to Brad afterwards. I had had some email conversations with Brad in the past, and we'd never met face to face. And I was happy to finally meet him. And I mentioned, it was a great evening. The only issue I had with it was that it was supposed to be clean, and your opening act dropped an F-bomb. And he was just very disappointed. And he said, that's not good. That's not supposed to happen at all. I'll deal with that. And I assume that he did, because it's not necessary to be funny. It just isn't. And this guy got desperate and dropped an F-bomb. But the thing is that today, it's not desperation. It's the norm. And that's really sad. It's just sad. It's intellectually lazy. Also, there's a lot of intellectual laziness around the abortion issue. And there's a story that's hot right now. It's a national news story coming out of Montgomery. The Alabama State Senate yesterday passed HB 314, the bill sponsored by State Representative Terry Collins of Decatur, a Republican. It's aimed at getting the U.S. Supreme Court to re-examine Roe versus Wade on the basis of personhood. You see, that is a big argument on the left, is that what is growing inside the mother is not a person. It may be life, but it's not a person. And I know that's hard to imagine. It's rational, honest people can't think that way, but we're not dealing with rational, honest people here. Amidst multiple hours of debate after 4 p.m., the Senate rejected an amendment that would have added exceptions for rape and incest by a 21-11 vote. This means the Senate passed the bill cleanly, exactly as it was passed by the House. HB 314 bans all abortion except when the life of the mother is in danger. The legislation criminalizes performing abortions, with performing an abortion becoming a Class A felony and attempting to perform an abortion becoming a Class C felony. This comes after the Senate Judiciary Committee last Wednesday tacked on an amendment by State Senator Tom Watley, Republican of Auburn, adding the exceptions for rape and incest. The full Senate then removed that amendment on the floor on Thursday. A final floor attempt to add the amendment back onto the bill was rejected on Tuesday. Collins and State Senator Clyde Chambliss, a Republican from Prattville, who is carrying the bill in the Senate, argued that adding exceptions for rape and incest dilutes the illegal challenge the bill is trying to mount, as the question at hand is whether the baby in the womb is a person and should have rights as such, regardless of how the baby was conceived. That is the core issue. The baby in the womb is a person and should have the rights of a person, the rights and protections we grant here in the United States of America. Collins has even said this, quote, "Well, how do we say the baby inside is a person unless they're conceived in rape or incest? If that amendment has to get on the bill, or was to get on the bill, then I'll kill the bill, because it won't go to the Supreme Court. It will contradict itself. And so that's why we're trying to keep it clean." Republican Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth previously called on the Senate to pass HB 314 without amendment. Senate Majority Leader Greg Reed, Republican of Jasper, also emphasized the core purpose of the bill in challenging Roe versus Wade. State Senator Cam Ward, Republican of Alabaster, told reporters on Tuesday that senators have received death threats over HB 314. I'm not surprised about that at all, which is why some members were provided personal security details for the day. Final passage occurred on a 25-6 vote. The bill now goes to Governor Kay Ivey's desk. She's not said if she will sign or veto the bill. A gubernatorial veto could be overridden by a simple majority in both legislative chambers. Now, this personhood issue is extremely important. And the rape or incest argument is one that is often made. It is a very emotional argument. And this morning, I've seen at least one friend of mine on social media use that argument. This is a friend who is not a raging liberal. This friend is a woman. And her argument was, you know, would you want to tell a 12-year-old girl she's got to carry that baby after rape or incest? That's an emotional, wrenching, horrible thing to think about. But the point of the bill is that what she is carrying is a person. It's not her body. It is a separate individual. And the rape and incest argument, statistically speaking, I happen to know that the actual number of abortions performed for the reason of rape or incest is statistically so small. It's 1.5%. 1.5%. That means that 98.5% of all abortions performed today are not for rape and incest. But people still use that argument. Well, what about rape and incest? What about the humanity of the person? What about the person? That's the flip side of that. Well, I was looking through my social media today, and there is this another story, and in the comments below it, someone said everybody is on here going crazy with the rape argument. Rape victims account for, she says, approximately 0.5, half of a percent of abortions. That actually isn't all that correct. The others are from pure carelessness and unwanted pregnancy / birth control. The chances of a rape ending in pregnancy are rare. Yes, it happens, but very rarely. So stop with the rape card. Find a new reason to justify termination of an unborn baby. And the responses to that comment say a lot. For example, imagine being in that 0.5%, though. Can you imagine being raped and then being forced to carry a child resulting from it? I don't agree with any of this at all, but at the very least, it could allow rape victims and incestuous relations an out. This attitude, I understand the thinking, but this attitude is an example of how far we have moved away from the concept of personal responsibility. I get it. You're not responsible for what happened to you. But this is a person, not a glob of cells or a mass of tissue. It's a person. And each of us has to consider our responsibility to that person, regardless of how that person happened to come to be there. It's a tough decision. But we're people, not animals, as one person actually argued about abortion, justifying it, saying animals abort their offspring all the time. Well, we're not animals. And we should explore personal responsibility as part of all of this as well. More on the other side of the break when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along. So have you done it yet? Have you made the commitment? Have you gone and filled out the form, signed up, and subscribed to the Daily Perspective newsletter? It comes out every day, and it is, actually, it's all the links to the articles I covered during this hour and more. It's my stack of stuff that I bring into the studio every day, and I send it out to those who subscribe. So you can actually go look at the articles for yourself, because a lot of the times I don't make it all the way through an article. And there's other things I don't talk about because I have ADHD. It's a great resource to help keep you informed about the realities of life. And sometimes, every now and then, I'll get a bug under my bonnet and I'll start writing my own stuff. And you get that as well. And the notes, they're also little asterisks under some of the story links with my comments. So there you go. It's a great resource for you. So I encourage you to get signed up today. Go to markcongleton.com, markcongleton.com, and look on the right-hand column of the page. You'll see the form, fill it out, and answer yes to the email that you'll receive confirming that's what you want to do, and then you'll start getting them. If you do that, if you're listening to the Facebook Live version of the show today, if you do it right now, you'll get today's email. So get out there and get that done, all right? Aight. Now, moving along, still on the same topic, we talked about the Alabama abortion law. The whole purpose of the law is to address this as personhood, to address the personhood of the baby. That's the issue, and to take it back to the Supreme Court. So that, and there are people who are saying, oh, this will never make it. The appellate court will shoot it down, that sort of a thing. Oh, okay, that's fine. The thing is that the process is, as George Carlin says, the process is underway. So the process is in play. Up next is Governor Ivey signing or not signing the bill, and then it moves from there. What happens after that? It doesn't matter, because as long as it gets signed, the process has started, the ball has started rolling, and it can eventually keep being challenged until it hits the Supreme Court, and at that point they have to reexamine Roe v. Wade, which is bad law, which was founded on a lie. it was founded on a lie. The person who is the Roe, an assumed name in Roe v. Wade, actually speaks, tours and speaks to groups now and tells them the truth about it. And she says the whole thing was a lie. It's all based on a lie. So that is something you need to consider. But that's Alabama. Now, let's move a little further to the east and go to the state of Georgia, where their heartbeat bill is being discussed nationwide. Up until this Alabama bill was passed, the hot topic was the heartbeat bill. And there was so much disinformation about it. And you can expect a lot of disinformation going out about the Alabama bill as well, which is why it's important to get these show notes so you get the links to the articles and you can see the reasoning and the truth behind it instead of the rumor. The media has been working overtime to frame Georgia's pro-life legislation, commonly known as the heartbeat bill, as harmful to women instead of what it actually is. It's protection for unborn children with beating hearts. The law, which was signed by Governor Brian Kemp last week, bans abortion after a heartbeat is detected. That happens around 6 weeks. 6 weeks in. It does not punish mothers. But that hasn't stopped the media's distortion of the law. For example, here are some of the patently false headlines about pro-life legislation that have been exposed. These are actually, this article is on Daily Wire, but this section of it is lifted from National Review in an article by David French. Business Insider. Women could get up to 30 years in prison for having a miscarriage under Georgia's harsh new abortion law. That's a lie. Slate. Georgia just criminalized abortion. Women who terminate their pregnancies would receive life in prison. That's a lie. The Week. Georgia's heartbeat abortion bill could imprison women for life. Another lie. And Glamour magazine said this. Women who have an abortion in Georgia could be sentenced to life in prison. Another lie. Remember, it doesn't punish women, doesn't punish mothers. As noted by Rich Lowry at the New York Post, the relevant section of Georgia's abortion law makes it clear that it applies to third parties and has been interpreted as such by the Georgia courts. Nor does it call for life imprisonment of anyone. In other words, an abortionist providing an illegal abortion or a man beating a woman and killing her baby would be in deep legal trouble for murder. Not the woman so-called self-terminating. There's more in-depth coverage of the legalese surrounding the law's implication. Quote, the heartbeat bill did not repeal a number of Georgia criminal statutes that explicitly apply to abortions and unborn children. And it does not overrule controlling legal authority, holding that these statutes bar prosecution of a woman for terminating her own pregnancy. And here are some more statutes. Well, I will leave the statutes to you. Go get this. Go get this article in the show notes and look at the codes and sections there, because this is all legalese stuff. All right. If a person performs an abortion in violation of the heartbeat bill, then one of these codes, section 1612.140, applies, which says, first, there's a specific, a person commits the offense of criminal abortion when, in violation of this code, he or she administers any medicine, drugs, or other substance, whatever, to any woman, or when he or she uses any instrument or other means, whatever, upon any woman with intent to produce a miscarriage or abortion. A person convicted of the offense of criminal abortion shall be punished by imprisonment for not less than 1 year or more than 10 years. So there is, once again, regardless of what Alyssa Milano might say, there is no life imprisonment for the mother. It's for people who commit the act, who actually perform the act. It does not impose life imprisonment on anybody. And Georgia courts have held that it does not apply to a woman who self-terminates, only to third parties who perform an abortion. For example, the Court of Appeals of Georgia refused to prosecute a woman who shot herself in the stomach to kill her unborn baby. They interpreted this section of the code this way. This statute is written in the third person, clearly indicating that at least two actors must be involved. In other words, she had to seek someone else who then performed the duty. Second, the Georgia Code section that criminalizes feticide, such as when a man attacks a woman for the purpose of killing her unborn baby, specifically states that nothing in this code section shall be construed to permit the prosecution of any woman with respect to her unborn child. Planned Parenthood even admitted to the Washington Post that the new pro-life legislation could not successfully prosecute women who self-terminate. Additionally, celebrities have claimed that women and girls who are raped would be forced to give birth. This is also a lie. The law offers exemptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. So these are just a few of the examples of what we're being told by the press and by entertainers and the like about a bill in Georgia that protects a baby in the womb once a heartbeat is detected. So we have Alabama, who has passed a law which forces us to consider the personhood of what is in the womb. And then there's the Georgia law, which forces us to recognize that this is a person, a life, once you can hear a heartbeat, and does not criminalize the woman in her decision to do whatever she does. It's whoever provides it. And the reasoning, I think, of the Georgia bill, the way the thinking on the Georgia bill, is because abortion is big business. Abortion is very profitable. Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers are making a great deal of money providing the service. Now, I know that abortion advocates will tell you that's not true. Only 3%, they said, this is what Planned Parenthood and their advocates claim. They claim that only 3% of what they make comes from abortion. Well, the purely rational, logical side of me says, then losing 3% of your business would be something you could probably recover from. Have you ever thought about it that way? 3% of your business. Some would say, wow, we're down 3%. What do we do? Well, you find ways to recover. If something you're doing is made illegal, then you find legal ways to make up the difference. 3%. The truth of the matter is that Planned Parenthood is so staunchly defending what they do, not because it is a service that is valuable and needed and right, it's because it's profitable. This is the truly ugly side of their business. Ask Abby Johnson, the former director of a Texas Planned Parenthood clinic, who tells us in her story that they were trained to sell abortion. Why? Because that's where they made their money. They were trained to overcome objections just like car salespeople. Abortion is big money. And that's why Georgia crafted their law the way they did. But they didn't do it to criminalize women. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. Hope you're having a happening Wednesday. I'm sorry. I'm having this little retro groove thing going on here. Wowzer. Oh, man. Let's shift gears and go back to something we were talking about Monday. And that is Representative Rashida Tlaib and her statement about this feeling of comfort or whatever that she feels when she thinks about the Holocaust, which was just a bizarre, twisted, and weird statement. And honestly, I got to be honest with you, I've sat and thought about this, and her statement is either just bald-faced ignorance, or she's just been programmed all of her life to believe this by her imams. And you and I mean, we've got experience with being told things all of our lives, and we grow up and later find out, well, that's not true. So you can hope that she will grow up. But there are people who are running interference for her, who are defending her, who the entire Democrat Party is demanding apologies from every Republican that's breathing air today for pointing out the truth about what she's had to say. And that's just crazy. And it's happening in the entertainment medium as well. She was on Late Night with Seth Meyers, and Seth Meyers ran interference for her. And this happened last week. Meghan McCain was on after that and asked him, are you her publicist? Are you her press person? And perhaps the more pertinent question is, who else do you represent? Because on the same day that Representative Rashida Tlaib was complaining via her 500,000 follower Twitter account that powerful forces were trying to silence her, this freshman representative also appeared on NBC's Late Night with Seth Meyers. Her presence on Late Night is unsurprising because the show has become something of a safe haven for unaccomplished freshman representatives with very specific opinions about a certain ethnicity. The fact that Meyers, like most of his colleagues, shills for Democrats isn't particularly noteworthy. What is notable, however, is that the comedian provides someone like Tlaib a giant platform to spread a despicable historical lie. Meyers said, framing her comments in the most dishonest way imaginable, he said, you were talking about the tragedy of the Holocaust, and the words you used was that it gave you a calming feeling because you were happy that it became a safe haven. Palestine became a safe haven for the Jewish people. Some criticized the use of calming feeling. You've said that it was taken out of context. I want to give you a chance to provide some context. No, most people criticized her for repeating the myth that Palestinians who had in reality aligned themselves with Nazis to kill Jews in Europe worked to keep Jews in concentration camps and massacred them in pogroms, provided Jews a safe haven. Right. Yet she repeats this same fiction on national TV without even the slightest pushback from Seth Meyers. She says, you know, the tragedy of the Holocaust, I mean, the reason why Israel was created was to create a safe haven for Jews around the world. And there's something in many ways beautiful about that. My ancestors, many had died or had to give up their livelihood, their human dignity, to provide a safe haven for Jews in our world. And that's something I wanted to recognize and kind of honor in some sort of way, she says. None of this is true. Now, we can assume Meyers knows about as much about early Zionist history as a cucumber does, but if you're going to take on big topics, you have a responsibility to bone up on your audience. A bone up, or your audience might be misled. It could have been interesting, for example, to learn why she thinks Americans should honor those who tried to kill Jews but failed. Really, if you attempt to destroy a people and you lose the ensuing war, you're not sacrificing anything. You've merely made a bad choice. It's not as if Tlaib hides her disdain for a Jewish safe haven. The folks she wants us to honor for Holocaust Remembrance Day refer to the formation of a Jewish homeland as Al-Nakba, or Day of the Catastrophe, not Safe Haven Day for the Jews. Her stated political position is in opposition to a Jewish state. Now, Seth Meyers' audience might not be aware of this, since the host employs the popular euphemism critical of Israel as a stand-in for destroy the Jewish state. It's also worth noting that Palestinians didn't have to lose their livelihoods. In fact, Jews brought with them unprecedented economic opportunity. They didn't have to lose their dignity. That was a choice. Palestinians were offered more rights by the Zionists than any Arab ruler had ever bestowed upon them, then or now. In any event, a simpering Meyers insinuated, as he did with Ilhan Omar, that these obnoxious statements are really just suffering from contextual problems. By throwing out a softball, what did you really mean? A question, he intimates to his audience, who are probably largely ignorant of the broader debate, that Tlaib has been victimized. And really, that's what this is all about. In his interview with Meghan McCain, he lectured her on how she needed to be more careful about her language when criticizing a Muslim woman like Omar, who has repeatedly contended that American Jews are money-driven shills for a foreign power. But Tlaib, a person calmed by the Holocaust, shouldn't be cautioned about her rhetoric. That's pretty weird. Instead, Myers let her mock people who comprehend history far better than she does, with no pushback. She said, "I got a text message from a friend who's like, hey, next time, you know, really clarify. Maybe talk like a fourth grader, because maybe the racist idiots would understand you better." She actually said that. She labeled everybody who disagrees with her as a racist idiot. Well, Seth Meyers isn't alone. In the past 2 days, the Washington Post, as an example, they've run 4 articles defending her without once being able to muster the strength to write a single line about her central thesis is just garbage. A string of scholars have noted that she's making stuff up or she's deeply ignorant. Even CNN had to acknowledge she was defending Nazi collaborators. This is something we covered the other day, remember? Seth Meyers, on the other hand, once again acted as a PR rep. Well, this young woman is an unapologetic Muslim, and she is anti-Semitic. When she is truthfully labeled by people who are being intellectually honest, then the left gets all up in arms. They get their knickers in a major twist because they're playing this game of political correctness again. How dare you insult somebody like that? You owe them an apology. Really? Why do we owe this woman or her cohorts an apology for simply correcting their misstatements? And I'll be generous and say it's a misstatement. It's actually a lie. And as I said to begin with, she may have just been indoctrinated this way and believes it because that's what she's been told by her spiritual leaders all of her life. She's bought in to the great lie that they keep spreading. They keep retelling the same lie again and again and again. And she's got so much invested in the lie. Remember, we've talked about being invested in lies before. She's so deeply invested in the lie. And because she is a public figure, and because she is a public figure who is a leftist, she will never back down from what she has said. You know from watching progressive politicians that unless they are convicted in a court of law and sentenced, and then sometimes even after that, they don't back off of their statements. They stand by what they've said. Unless it is politically advantageous to change their tune. So, don't count on her changing her tune anytime soon. Because she and the Democrat Party are using this to their political advantage. They're trying to make it seem as though everyone who disagrees with her and is pointing out the error of her ways is a racist. So once again, they're playing the race card. And that's something we're all very familiar with. The race card is what is played when truth can't work to your advantage. And it's all about political advantage when it comes to these people. And that brings us to the end of the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning. God bless. Have a great day. Bye-bye.